Hello, and welcome to the Inside of Views podcast for August the 6th, 2021. This is episode number 70. Our top stories today, we drive the Audi RS e-tron GT, Biden backs 2030 50% EV sales target, Tesla Cybertruck hits 1.25 million reservations. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the illustrious Mr. Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the majestic Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which, of course, is available on all the best podcast platforms. And, of course, Kyle Connor joins us from Out of Spec Studios. He also puts together highly choreographed, action-packed videos for the Inside EV's YouTube channel. We are also joined this week by the burgeoning star of car reviews on the Inside EV's YouTube channel, Mr. Michael Cantu, who woke up super early out there in California to join us today. So before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the show, if you haven't already, of course. And if you're watching on YouTube or Twitch, please ring that bell icon for notifications. All right. So welcome, everybody. So let's start with what we've been driving this week. And I don't think, Tom or Kyle, you haven't been driving anything electric?
Nothing out of the ordinary for me this week.
Okay.
A lot of combustion stuff for me.
Right. You got that 17-mile-an-hour brand new Nissan Frontier, which,
Hey, great vehicle. The Frontier, totally redesigned. First time in like 18 years.
Yeah,
there's some people that are driving that know nothing but the previous generation Frontier their entire lives. Pretty amazing.
That's true.
That has nothing to do with this podcast, so we'll move on.
It's so heartbreaking.
I do want to mention something. I saw an advertisement come across my feed this morning, and it said for $0 down in the state of Colorado, which I live, you can lease a brand new Nissan Leaf for $49 a month. Now, I don't know what taxes and fees are included in that, but that is like half the price of a normal cell phone bill for a whole car. And right. So I'm going to explore that. Maybe we'll pick one of those up.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. That would be interesting, actually. And we may talk about that a little bit later. They've got deals across in certain states, in certain or cities even. I need to check the story again. But yeah, the Nissan Leaf prices have been cut, and there's some like crazy lease deals going on. But that sounds like better than anything I've read so far.
It's a local dealer down in Denver, $49 a month. Wasn't it a Nissan dealer that was including a Leaf if you bought a Titan, which I think is a great
That a while back, yeah.
Awesome. So, you know, Leaf might be the sweet spot just to kind of have a car that you can just loan to friends or whatever, kind of like how we use our smart car, which I guess if we're talking about what we're driving, we bought out. So my smart car that I love and Tom's been in and, you know, best car I've ever owned, we leased it and then we decided to keep it. So we bought it out. So it's my second electric smart car. But now I've just bought the same one twice, apparently.
You weren't fooling anybody when you were putting out polls. Should I keep it? Should we send it back?
I had already been done
I knew Kyle was keeping that vehicle. You could see him when he drives it. He just loves driving it. There's no way he was not going to buy that lease out. No way.
Someone said that because he even made a video being like, oh, do I keep it or not?
And exactly.
Someone in the comment section said, dude, look at the smile on your face. If you own a car that makes you smile that much, you've got to keep it. There's no way you're getting rid of it.
Exactly.
So plenty more videos to come. Lift kit in the future and green wrap and some off-roading tires. So stay tuned.
Smart ED Safari Edition. Sounds good.
That's right.
Awesome. Hey, so Michael, I guess you've had a go in the brand new Audi e-tron GT, but not just any Audi e-tron GT, but the RS e-tron GT,
right?
Which is, of course, the high performance version of that car, or if you will, the turbo version in Porsche parlance. And I reference Porsche here because the Audi e-tron GT sits on the same J1 platform as the Taycan. So there are definitely some similarities there. So let's maybe start off with the looks. I've said before that the door handles, which aren't flush like the ones on the Taycan or any other good-looking car, are bad. And I don't understand why all the plastic around the nose cap there is all black instead of like the body color. But tell me why I'm wrong about this, and maybe others can chime in.
There's an option for a body color grill. So all that black plastic you're talking about can be body color.
Like the plastic surrounding it, like the nose?
Correct. Yeah. Okay.
The nose stays
body color.
The nose stays black, or does that go body color too?
The nose can be optioned to be body color.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Not just black.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about the looks of this?
As I said in my video, I think it's the best looking EV in the market personally. The Porsche Taycan has a very neat look to it. It's very unique, very futuristic. But I believe this e-tron GT just is beautiful. I think it's a gorgeous car.
And you've seen it, of course, in the flesh. So tell us how this all went down. Like, so Audi brought the cars to California. That's the regular e-tron and the RS. Did you drive both of them?
Yes. So I drove both of them in the Angeles Crest near Los Angeles, you know, those the famous, you know, mountain driving roads. Right. And we went out to an airstrip. They took us out to an airstrip over in the desert, the Agua Dulce airstrip. And over there, you know, we got to try the car on a slalom and we got to do a 0 to 100 run. It was a lot of fun. And that was in between between the two canyon runs. So it was a good time. And we had a lot of seat time in both the RS and in the regular e-tron GT.
Right. Have you driven the Taycan?
Yes, I have. I've driven only the turbo version of the Taycan a few months ago.
So not the Turbo S.
No, not the Turbo S, unfortunately.
So does the Audi RS, like their top performance version, does that match the Turbo or the Turbo S?
To my knowledge, it matches the Turbo.
Okay, so
yeah, I'm guessing they could have put the Turbo S power into the e-tron if they wanted to, but I don't know if it's possible to have an Audi that's, you know, as quick or faster than a Porsche. And I don't know if Porsche would want that.
that's true, right?
Yeah.
So what do you think?
Oh, it's fantastic. If you like the way the Taycan drives, which I'm guessing most people do because it drives great, then you'll like the way the e-tron drives. You know, as I mentioned in the video, very similar driving characteristics, the exception being the Taycan, I guess you could say, is a little bit tighter. It's a little bit stiffer, a little bit sharper, you know. From what I remember, the steering in the Taycan's a little bit quicker. Suspension might be a little bit stiffer. But overall, it was great to drive, mostly because it was very comfortable. It was a very comfortable car. Even in dynamic mode, it soaks up bumps and dips and rough road very well. At the same time, it handles very well. And that's nice because, you know, like, for example, in some Teslas, you know, Teslas, of course, also handle very well, but there's a little bit of a trade-off. It has a very stiff ride. You know, Teslas tend to have kind of rough rides sometimes. But in the e-tron GT, the ride's very good and it handles very well at the same time.
Nice. I heard the steering. Did you criticize the steering in your review at all? Like, it was too light, possibly?
I didn't in my review. In comfort mode, yes, it's kind of light in comfort mode. In dynamic mode, I felt it to be okay. But if it was a little bit tighter, I'd be okay with that. A little bit heavier. A little bit heavier, then I'd be okay with that. If I remember correctly, the Taycan steering, I believe, was a little bit heavier. But it's been a few months.
Right. So someone asks about range. Gary Baker in the Facebook on Facebook watching us. So the range is kind of an interesting thing here with the Audi. Do you have the numbers right off the top of your head?
Yeah, so it's 232, I believe, for the RS and 238 for the regular e-tron.
Okay, so that's pretty mm-hmm. close together, and so that's more miles than the Taycan's registered for. The Taycan gets EPA mileage is 201 and 225 miles. Are those EPA figures?
Yes, the EPA figures, correct.
Okay, so does it actually get more range than the Taycan, or is that just they're just giving the EPA different sets of numbers?
They claim that it will drive a little bit further than a Taycan, but they didn't say much else. They didn't say how much further. They didn't say why, but they say it'll drive a little bit further than a Taycan. And it'll probably go further than 230 miles, as we've seen Taycans go further than their EPA estimates. So I'm sure the e-tron GT in a real world driving might also go further than the EPA estimates.
Right. Cool. And when you were driving, did you get the sense that it would, you know, achieve the range that it was showing?
Yes. I mean, we didn't drive it, you know, about 60 to 70 miles. It seemed like it was going to get that range. It did seem that way.
Right on.
Mm-hmm. And my biggest complaint, it's not much of a complaint for everyone, but the liftoff brake regen is very minimal. You're used to Teslas, this would be very different for you, because in a Tesla, it's you know, basically one pedal driving. But with this one, you lift off the accelerator pedal, and it coasts. It basically just coasts. You could adjust the liftoff brake regen with the paddles. There's two levels for adjustment, but they are very light. You barely feel them. So it drives a lot like an ICE car in the sense that there's no one pedal driving. When you lift off the brake pedal, it creeps forward like an ICE vehicle.
Okay.
And you have to use the brake pedal. There's no one pedal driving.
And the Porsche has more regen than that?
I want to say yes, but I'm not 100%.
Right.
Kyle, I don't believe it does, if I can interject here. Sure, I think they're set up the same way. And the one thing that you have to note is that it's very the vehicles have very light liftoff regen, but that doesn't mean that they have light regen. The way it's integrated is that it's a blended braking system, unlike what Tesla has. Tesla, when you press the friction brake, it's all friction brake. Many other EVs, including this vehicle and the Taycan, when you depress the friction brake pedal, the first good amount of pedal travel, what you're doing is increasing regenerative braking. You're not using friction brakes. So I know with the Taycan, I think the Porsche engineers told me over 90% of braking gets done 100% through regenerative braking. Only something like 8% of the braking actually is used as the friction brake. And that you can imagine would be in panic braking situations where you're really stomping on the brake to slow down really quickly. But most of the driving, even driving aggressively and sporty, it's all done through regen, but the vehicle doesn't have that strong liftoff regen that some people appreciate.
Can you tell, Tom, and Kyle, when you're driving, have they blended it nicely? Can you tell, because obviously you drive a lot of EVs, but can you tell where the transition is, or is it really, really good and you couldn't spot it?
Depends on what braking system you get. If you get the base brakes in Taycan, you can tell easily. If you get the surface coated brakes, it's better. And then if you get the ceramics, the blending is near perfect. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And I've driven both e-tron GT and RS GT as well. And
you did drive
it. Difference in brake pedal blending on both.
That's realize that you had driven it for some reason.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I didn't spend as much time as Michael did. I just took him around.
You know, one thing I will add to that, and I like to bring this up sometime, we're, you know, keenly tuned to driving feel of vehicles, of braking and, you know, pedal travel and steering. The average driver, I think, that gets into a Taycan or an Audi GT the feel of when it transitions to friction brakes from regen, I think it's going to be minimal. I think the average person won't notice it that much. Like, we go in trying to feel when it comes up. The average person's not even going to think about that, you know. And so, you know, it's not like, oh wow, there's this abrupt feel. You have to kind of feel for it to get it, and you have to know what you're looking for. If not, you're not going to notice it.
You know, sometimes as well, if you're driving a car that's actually got a digital display of the amount of regen in front of you, you can tell as well, because your foot doesn't move on the brake pedal, but you'll see the meter moving as the regen becomes less. Even though you're like, well, I'm not changing my foot position, but it's doing something in the background. So yeah, if you really pay attention, you can see it. You can get nerdy. We all do. But as long as it just works, and there are good and bad examples out there of that blending.
So Bill B in the comments asks, can you turn off creep? Michael, do you know?
I don't think so. No.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. You can't turn creep off
in Taycan or e-tron.
Same as all the VW cars.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say same as ID4.
Mm. I personally like creep, but I've heard some people say that they don't like it. I don't know.
What just add it as a button, like in the Hyundais and Kias. I think it's like a button called auto hold or something. Mm-hmm. It defaults to off every time you start the car. It's a faff. You got to turn the damn thing on. But just add a button or something.
That's yeah, well, auto just give people makes, a choice.
Just put yeah, it in the auto, in the menu.
Auto hold makes cars with creep better because you don't have to keep your foot on the brake. But I still like no creep and auto hold is the traditional way. There should always be a setting for creep for new drivers, I think. And overall, it's just, you know, it's not the natural thing for the car to do to want to inch forward all the time. I don't know whoever thought that was a good idea, but it has to do with torque converter automatics, always putting, you know, pressure on that fluid converter, moving the car in a manual transmission, in a dual clutch vehicle, in a electric vehicle. Naturally, there's nothing that's forcing you forward. So it's not as it should be.
That's weird. I like creep, but then my gas car was like a standard transmission. So I never experienced that in my own vehicle for like the past 20 years or whatever, but I still like creep right. My
well, next right. time buy a torque converter automatic, you'll get all the creep you want.
Yeah, I will not be doing that, actually.
But as Martin said, it's so simple to just add a button and let the owner decide which way they want it. You know, it's really not hard. And, you know, some manufacturers, you know, particularly the German manufacturers have this, you know, thought process that, look, we know better than you do. You know, we've been doing this. We're the engineers. Like, we'll tell you what you want. And that kind of goes against a lot of people, particularly Americans, you know, attitudes like, no, you know, even if it's stupid, even if it's worse, I want it because I want to make that decision.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So, hey, did they both have massaging seats, Michael? You're muted still. You're muted.
Oh, you're on mute.
Nope.
Rookie mistake.
Oh, well, he's still on mute.
I'm so sorry about that.
It's all right.
The yes, the RS did, but the regular e-tron did not. Yes, newbie mistake. My bad.
It's all right.
Cool. But it's an option on the regular e-tron, not the RS as well.
I believe so. Yes, yes, option yeah. The regular e-tron.
Yeah. So you have to have it spec. There's a performance pack. There's like a prestige pack, and a couple other things.
Correct.
Right. So many.
But the RS is the, I don't think is worth the money. So, all right, let me share my thoughts on this 2 seconds.
Yeah.
All right. 120 grand for like a maxed out regular e-tron GT. That's like where you're going to find them all specced on lots. 170,000 for the RS e-tron GT. That's the one that I drove stickered at 168. It was like an edition one. So it had a $20,000 option package with a carbon fiber roof and all this other nonsense. First off, styling, I don't think looks nearly as good as Taycan, my personal opinion. I think it looks like the engineers took a Taycan and said, how can we make it worse? And then here's the e-tron GT. My opinion. Don't like it. Seriously. It looks chunky, weird, plasticky. Something about that car looks not cohesive. They tried this new blend of plastic materials. The wheel designs are worse than ugly. To me, not into it. You know, and if it was a hatchback, maybe it could save itself, but then it's like Taycan Cross Turismo. I personally would give up the speed of an e-tron GT and buy a base Taycan Cross Turismo with all the good options, my opinion. So styling, there's that. Driving dynamics, very similar to Taycan, not as sharp like Michael mentioned. Still plenty stupid fast. You really don't need any more. Rear steering is good, not as well tuned as Taycan, in my opinion. You can still feel the 1-2 shift on that second, that transmission on the rear axle. I thought it was really quiet, really comfortable. Of course, very grown up driving dynamics. But, you know, arguably the Audi interior makes more sense than the Porsche's interior. The Porsche has like 9 screens and they're all kind of small and weird. And I really think that the Audi interior was nicer than the Porsche's, but I prefer the Porsche interior because it says Porsche. I'm joking. It actually, the Audi is nicer.
Yeah, it has nice interior, yeah.
But then when you get the RS e-tron GT, then if you get the carbon roof, you don't get a sunroof. So here you just spend 160 grand to get a carbon roof to save 22 pounds or whatever it is. I made that number up. And you lose this glass feeling of an open air cabin. But, you know, as I always say, I'll just use the restroom in the morning and still go faster than the guy with the carbon roof if I get a glass roof. So, you know, that it's stupid. I don't need to save weight in a 5,000 pound vehicle. Overall, great car, amazing charging curve. My friend Brian just bought one actually, and he's loving it. He's a longtime Tesla fan, you know, been Tesla all around, and he bought one with his wife, who changed the name of his channel, I Won Tesla, and he's like, dude, this is legit. I'm like, I know the cars outside of Tesla are getting amazing, truly incredible. But you know, at the end of the day, you know, can you live with the charging networks? And that's going to be the big question. So overall, my opinion is it's a worse Taycan just by a Porsche.
Right.
And to add to that, the price difference between the Audi and a Porsche, there's not much of a price difference either. So Kyle does have a good point.
Right. Yeah, it's just like you can get maybe a little bit less spec Taycan and, you know, you're in e-tron GT money. These things are going to tank in the used market. We've already seen it with Taycan. So the best thing to do is buy a four-year-old one of these for 35 to 50 grand with like 80,000 miles on it, because who cares? It's an EV. Yeah. And that's going to be the move. You know, feel bad for the first person who's going to take all the depreciation. Certainly not going to be me.
I mean, if you can afford $180,000 for a car, what do you care about depreciation?
Yeah, feel bad.
A lot of people do care about that. It's true. I mean, look, you get comfortable. A lot of people just want to spend $1,500 a month on a lease or whatever it is. They're comfortable with their payment. You know, they can go from S-class money and then having to spend fuel into this. They actually save quite a bit. So, you know, it's, you know, same problems, more zeros, right? But at the end of the day, they're still problems. So people do factor in cost on these high luxury cars. And yeah, I think great car. But then it's like, why didn't you just get the Taycan? It's the worst one. You went out of your way to buy the worst car. And yeah, hopefully someone will disagree with me here, because I don't want to throw Audi under the bus.
Right. Tom, what do you save Audi?
So I'm probably in between Kyle and Michael here. I think it's a great vehicle. I love Taycan. I've driven them so many times. I've praised them here on the channel, as the followers know. And I view it as just a different version of the Taycan. And more Taycans, the better. You know, I wish Volkswagen should put out their version of the Taycan, you know, and have all the Volkswagen Group brands have their own version, because the vehicle is that good. And I think people that are Audi aficionados, I mean, there's loyal Audi owners. They might not buy a Porsche. They might want to get their, you know, they have their 10th Audi now and they're looking for their 11th. And this is the newest, latest, greatest thing from Audi. And they'll end up in that. Styling is subjective. You know, Kyle can hate it. Michael can love it. I'm somewhere in the middle. I don't hate it. I don't think it was, you know, the way Kyle described it is you took a Taycan, you beat it with an ugly stick for an hour. You know, I don't look at it that badly. I think the Taycan is better in my view. And I'm 100% with Kyle behind, look, what's the best play here? Get a base Cross Turismo, you know, put his, you know, don't load it up. You know, you can end up with one for like 110 grand and like that's the play. I mean, that if I had the coin, I mean, that would be the vehicle I'm driving. You know, it's the best play, I think, out of the whole Taycan, you know, e-tron GT family, money wise. You know, you get the most bang for your buck and it's the most utilitarian of all these vehicles. But yeah, I'm happy Audi made it. I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to end up in this vehicle that are going to experience electric drive that wouldn't have if it was just the Taycan. So in that regard, I think it's a good move by Audi. And that would be, you know, that would honestly, it's going to put more people in electric vehicles. So I'm supporting it. Could it have been better? I think it could have looked a little bit nicer, but I think I've told the story more than once here. I'll say it one more time on the Inside EVs podcast. About 3 years ago, I'm at an auto show. I think it was the LA Auto Show. Might have been 4 years ago now, God. And I'm talking to some friends that worked at Audi, that were very high up in Audi, and they were talking about how they had made the first prototype, you know, GT, Audi GT. And when Porsche saw it, they said no. They said, go back to the drawing board, because it looked too good. It looked too sporty. And Porsche is higher on the echelon at Volkswagen Group than Audi is. So Audi had to go back and tone down the styling.
They beat it with an ugly stick.
Yeah, basically. Well, because Porsche –
How can you put those giant taillights on a car and say it looks good?
Yeah, well, that's
door handles.
I mean,
door handles, man. Like,
it's that back three quarter. We just had a picture of it up there. It's just like, wow, you went out of your way. So it, you know the front of the F-150 Lightning, how it has this very awkward light bar around it?
Yeah,
I can like that light bar.
I think it looks good, but it's a little bit plasticky. This is like the front end of the F-150, but on the back. It's just a giant plastic red light. And it looks better on certain colors. I think the car looks best in black, personally. You get a black one of these, all the black accents fit in. Yeah. I'm with it. But yeah, I think you got to black it out if you're going to get one. Yeah, now we're talking. That just
there we go. That's much better.
It's like you have to hide all the details for this to look good.
Right. Actually, I like the red in our story on Inside EVs. The red one, there's like we have some photography at the bottom. Did you take those pictures, Michael?
No.
Okay.
I didn't.
Yeah, but I thought it looked good in the red spec and those in that in our gallery anyway. I'm not sure, it doesn't look so great there. It doesn't really pop, but in the actual photography, I thought it looked pretty good, except for all the black on the front.
And Dom, you know about how cars are made. Is this the last car that's going to be made on the J1 platform? Is everything from now on? So the Macan, the mm-hmm. Q5, what's that? Are they all going to be this PPE? So this is the last time they're going to use this blank canvas this car. So anything else, new Porsches, new Audis are going to have a new platform, which can impact architecture, charging, performance. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but talk about a great chassis, a great platform. You know,
really?
Someone in the comment keeps going over, range. Well, whatever. Range is amazing on this. It just doesn't show it on paper. Just about 300 miles at 70 miles per hour in Taycan rear-wheel drive. We've done 285 in all-wheel drive Taycan. I expect this to be right up there. Maybe we can even get one over 300 if we get one with the really ugly aero wheels. maybe it'll do 300 miles. But at the end of the day, range is not king. That's what people need to understand.
Right.
For some, it is king. For me,
I mean, to a certain extent, you want to get over 200 miles.
Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. You need like at least 200 miles usable real world, let's just say. Yeah. Then it all comes down to how quickly can you recharge and how much range do you have after that charging session. So you can have something that peaks at 1,000,000 kilowatts, but only does it for a little bit of time. That's not useful. It has to be, a really nice solid curve. And that's something I actually did a 0 to 100% charging test on Model Y recently. And I was pretty disappointed on the current software of how little time it spent at the peak 250 kilowatt. It was tapered off. Like it only did it from like 12 to like 28%, some really minimal number, and then big ledges. And then you get into e-tron GT, you get into Taycan, that thing sits at 270 kilowatts, sometimes 271, 272 kilowatts for a really long time. It's how we set the Cannonball record on this chassis. It is the king. It is not range. It is all charging curve.
The head of Hyundai electrified something platforms this week threw some shade at Model Y and said, look, just wait till the Ioniq 5 and the Kia EV6 get out into the real world. And we're charging at our full rate at 55% because we've worked out cooling better than Tesla. And whatever, it wasn't a Tesla website I read it on, so it was a pretty balanced article. But the point was, don't look at peak rate. Their peak rate's actually very good. It's either 232 or 239, depending on the press release. But it's like, look how far into the pack we can go, 200 kilowatts.
Right.
And they didn't need to throw any shade at Tesla. They don't need to do that, but it gets headlines. I know why they did it. But yeah, that's totally the point. I can't wait to see these two new cars out in the real world. I mean, we've got them arriving this week. So
that's right. I think we have a story on Inside of Ease about them arriving in the UK. Rolling off the ferry.
Two ships following each other. So the first one had a few hundred. I think they were for dealers. I think the demonstrators.
Okay.
And the next lot, there's a guy that listens to my podcast about 20 minutes away from me. I'm going to go around to his place.
You should go film his collection day.
Yeah.
Go to the dealer and pick it up.
We have some Ioniq 5 customers on the Inside Eves forum. So I'm looking forward to hearing about, their delivery experiences and their first impressions, because they've been waiting for this car pretty anxious. And it's a pretty special car. It's kind of neat.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, so let's talk some politics. I think Tom is on a tight schedule today. He's got places to go, things to do. Same with Kyle. So let's get this show on the road. So politics. Yeah. So yesterday, the president of the United States of America laid down a marker in transportation electrification, signing an executive order that targets new vehicle sales to be 50% by 2030. That includes all electrics, and plug-in hybrids and fuel cell vehicles. So to get there, the EO, that's the executive order, laid out steps that the government will take to achieve the goal, including the prioritizing of setting clear standards, expanding key infrastructure, and spurring critical innovation and investing in the American auto worker. So regarding the clear standards part, which was the only part that was really discussed in the actual document itself, the EPA and DOT are instructed to, and the language here is kind of nuts, to consider beginning work, like think about starting, you know, work on emission and fuel economy standards for passenger cars and light duty trucks, beginning with the model year 2027 and extending through and including at least model year 2030, as well as new efficiency standards for heavy duty pickup trucks and vans, beginning with model year 2028 and extending through and including at least model year 2030. And there is similar language for heavy duty engines and vehicles. So basically the EPA and DOT are ordered to coordinate with California and the other ZEV states, zero emission credit states, to come up with a standard by 2024 that will adopt, it will kind of adopt their standard and maybe extend it to vehicles that aren't covered. But I think actually California now has heavy duty trucks and things also covered under their standard. So it feels to me like it's going to be like an adoption basically of California standards. I'm not sure if they're going to get stricter or not. Now there aren't a whole lot of specifics in the bill about how they plan to expand like key infrastructure or spur critical innovation. But during the signing ceremony, the president did mention a few key things. For example, the EV buyers, he mentioned he'd like to get like them to get a $7,500 basic credit. Like that's what we get now, except for the automakers who've run out. They've sold too many. And it sounded like he wanted to bring that back for those automakers as well. And he also mentioned a $2,500 for vehicles made in the USA, a tax credit. And then another $2,500 credit for cars made by union members. So he mentioned 500,000 charging stations as well as investing in related R&D, which sounded like a bit of a gimme to our traditional OEM automakers, but it wasn't specific about that part of it. So how these things are going to be, will be achieved, it was unclear to me. Will they have to go through Congress? Are these 500,000 charging stations like a new network? There seems to be a lot of unanswered questions. And the whole thing reeked heavily of politics too, of course. The auto union, the UAW, played a high-profile role at the ceremony with Bernie Ricci is the president of UAW Local 600. He introduced President Biden and mentioned that the union supported Biden in his first run for office in Delaware decades ago. And of course, the union is a very heavily Democratic voting organization, and it's still a political force. So it wasn't a huge surprise that despite this being a big deal about the electrification of transportation in the U.S., the American automaker that has done more to advance that effort and which sells more electric cars than the other U.S. automakers combined wasn't invited. So Jim Farley, the CEO of Ford, was there. Mary Barra, the CEO of General Motors, was there. The chief operating officer of FCA Stellantis, Mark Stewart, was there. The CEO of Tesla, Elon Musk, was not. Now, on one hand, I don't think that's a big deal. Tesla is basically anti-union and open about it. We don't know how the other CEOs honestly feel about unions, but they're stuck with them. So if they harbor any anti-union sentiments, it would not be helpful for them to mention it. So I don't really want to get bogged down on the union thing, but I will say that to me, it sent a message that politics are more important than the supposed goal of electrification and made the whole thing look like a lot of posturing.
Really?
To be blunt. And I also don't think that 50% sales by 2030 is... Oh, you're being sarcastic. Okay. Yes.
There we go.
Of course.
So
how does politics work its way into this?
So I also don't think 50% sales by 2030 is a serious raising of the bar. I think we're going to hit that target anyway, or probably sooner. And so I know, like, Tom probably has a more rational view of everything than I do about this. So I don't know. Let's start with you, Tom. What do you think about this whole thing? Political theater or something to celebrate?
Well, something in the middle, or both. You know, yeah, it's high political theater, and it's good news. I mean, it's a non-binding executive order. You know, it's not law. You know, but it's good. We have to set these lofty goals. You know, we have to try to.
Is it lofty though?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. I as big, as bullish as I am on electrification, we look at the number of vehicles that are sold. You know, currently we're at what, 2%. You know, if by the end of this decade, you know, we're at 50%, I'll be super happy with that personally. I mean, I don't know if we can even make enough batteries in the next 7 or 8 years to be able to electrify 50% of our entire new car sales, Dom. You know, that's, I'd like to see more information about how we attain goals like that, rather than saying this, you know, like in 2008 when President Obama said, you know, 1 million EVs on the road by 2015, there was no, well, this is how we're going to help you do it. It was just, that's our goal. And of course we fell short. I think we hit about 400,000 when 2015 came. We didn't even get 50% of what the goal was. So I'd be more interested in hearing concrete plans to, you know, low interest or no interest Department of Energy loans to build out battery plants and things like that, rather than, you know, just, you know, this, there was a lot of political speak here. It's mm-hmm. good. I'm glad they're talking about it and setting these goals. Talking about reshaping the tax credit to a point of sale rebate, which would be hugely effective here in the U.S. I can't believe we haven't done. Well, I can believe we haven't done that already, knowing political gridlock that we have. But it's the way it's currently structured, it's terrible. The incentive, the federal tax credit needs to be changed to a point of sale rebate. It's so biased against lower income people that we should be really trying to incentivize to get into these electric vehicles.
Preach.
Yes.
Exactly. That's like, so we got $7,500, $2,500, another $25, like $12,500, if my math is right. And, but how much money do you have to make to owe that much in taxes? Like, you know, a lot of, it just leaves out so many people that need the money. I mean, the people that, you know, make that kind of money don't really need that much tax credit, really.
And the lower income people, Don, can't float $7,500 for 8 months until they get their taxes back. You know, putting the cash on the hood would put a lot more people in EVs.
100%.
Yes. So what was that comment? Chartreuse Chic had an interesting comment back here about the unions.
Yeah, I popped it up on screen for a moment. It was about Tesla, yeah.
Yeah, Tesla is anti-union. If we want electrification, we need labor on board. And that's a fair point. I have mixed feelings about unions, but it's important to have as many people on board as possible, you know. And we think of unions as a left, but yeah, we need all the political spectrum to be on board with this somehow. I'm not sure about how you achieve that in this country. But
Can I give you my perspective as the only non-American on this call?
Please.
To me, it looked like a lot of theater for people who needed their ego stroked. So a bunch of senior managers, they got to go and have a picture with El Presidente, go home and tell their partners, I had a great day today, and hopefully crack on with the job. Now, I've had a lot of people over the last 24 hours on social media, on my email, furious at why Tesla wasn't there. And, you know, I'd say to all of them, but why would they be? Like, this event was pure theater to flatter the egos, stroke the CEOs of people, of companies that love to burn stuff. Like, they make a lot of money out of cars that burn stuff, right? And, you know, electric, for most of them, is a pain in the ass that it's here, because they had things really, not all, but some of them had things really good their way. Why would first of all, Elon Musk would take over the event. Secondly, but why would they be? Because Tesla are 100% electric. They're not trying to, you haven't got to persuade Tesla to do anything.
Right.
So why would they be there? This wasn't a look at all of our great American car makers, of which Tesla is a great American car maker. It's look at these guys that aren't doing anything at the minute. Can we just all shine a spotlight on them and stare at them until they're uncomfortable? That's what I thought it was. But maybe I'm reading it wrong. I'm not in your country.
I don't know. Michael, do you have some thoughts about this? Okay.
No, I think what Martin had to say is pretty accurate, actually. you know, and it's true. Why would Tesla be there? I mean, it was a shame that the biggest EV automaker, you know, wasn't there, you know, but there really was no reason for them to be there. It's like, you know, all that. I agree with that. But I think Biden did this just, and, you know, it's a start, and I like all these promises, and I hope it does, you know, turn to something. But, you know, I think part of this, of course, is politics, and he did it just to make certain people or certain groups happy, you know?
Right.
And, you know, it does, those large automakers got some time on TV to say, hey, look, we're not just building gas guzzling ICE vehicles. We have EV plans. Hello. Can y'all see us?
Right.
So I kind of, you know, I'm kind of on board with what Martin had to say. Yeah.
Right on. So to get to 50% of sales, I don't know what the big obstacles are going to be. I think charging networks, I think infrastructure is a big deal. And I think domestic mining may be a big deal of getting lithium, depending on how, you know, different things play out. I know we had a story that, or I don't know if we had it on the site or not, but the big supplier of lithium mineral for Tesla on the East Coast, I believe it's in North Carolina. There's a big Hard Rock Lithium development that, you know, they're having some Piedmont Lithium. They haven't applied for a permit.
They say they will this month, but
right, but
that could be delayed or even rejected. There's no guarantee.
Right, the locals are unhappy with them at the moment. It was clear. So, and you know, there's like the GM, big GM affiliated lithium play that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, and the geothermal mining out in the West. So that's, you know, the unproven technology sort of at this point still. So I mean, There's lithium out there, but is it going to be produced domestically and in quantities large enough where it's still affordable and make all the batteries that we need? I don't know.
Just thinking about Tom's point really quickly. I know we have to move on to other stuff, but is it, you know, setting the 50% target, is it not better to have a number and then not get there than not have a number at all and just see, you know, because it's about capital investment, isn't it? So it's about, as Tom says, that, you know, there should be funds, there should be interest-free loans. It shouldn't be tax credits, but it should be helping businesses make those multi-billion dollar capital investments. But isn't it about direction? Like, now they know a clear direction, whether the number is actually 40% or 39% or 45%, isn't it better just to put a line in the sand? Or is that kind of pointless? I don't know. It feels like it's a good thing.
And I mean, I like the way that Elon does it. You know, he puts a number out there, or raises expectations, and you know, sometimes he hits them, and sometimes he doesn't. Whatever, but you know, people at least have an idea of what the goal is. And yeah, I don't think 50% is high enough. Who is it? Monroe Engineering had a little short video yesterday where he says, you know, we'll hit 20 or 50% by 2028. So, you know, we're on the same page, Sandy and I. But
I just, my concern is, can we tool up and transition that quickly? I mean, you know, the capital investment needed in these factories to transition them to, you know, battery electric production lines, you don't just say, okay, next year we're going to start making a million more EVs. You know, it takes a year or so just to change over factory after factory to be able to do them. You can't necessarily make full battery electric vehicles in the same production line as you're making your conventionally fueled vehicles. So I'm just trying to look at it as a timeline and saying, how do we get to 50% inside of 8 years, because it's only 8 years away now.
Right.
I don't know if we can physically do that unless, like, this year everybody started shifting and knocking down their factories and building out new factories and started building battery plants. I mean, we're beginning to, but these battery plants take years to build. The production lines take years to transition. You know, the infrastructure takes years to implement. To me, if we're at 50% in 2030, it's a win. I think it's a good goal to set by then, personally. I mean, I think towards the second half of this decade, around 2026, 2027, that adoption rate is going to – that's where we're going to hit the hockey stick adoption rate, where it's – we're kind of doing this now. It's going to do this. But if once it starts doing that, we still need 5 or 6 years before we're getting, you know, over that 60, 70% rate point. So I think – around 2030, 2028, 2030, the adoption rate's going to just skyrocket. But I think it's going to take us to 2035 to get, you know, to that 75, 80% mark. Personally, I just don't physically think we could do it any quicker.
Right. Yeah. Man. It's funny. I look at, like, so see what Europe is doing, and they're going to be there ahead of us, you know, because they've set standards down earlier and their automakers are, you know.
And we haven't heard Kyle comment on this. I bet you he's even less optimistic than I am.
I'm staying out of it. Staying out of it.
Oh, come on. We got to get you on record.
I know you're – yeah, go ahead.
No, I think it's all dumb. This was a waste of everyone's time watching this presentation. Sorry.
Okay.
I don't think it means anything. I think if we see 10% of new car electric sales in the next few years, that would be amazing. We don't know – like, does this include plug-in hybrid vehicles with a plug? Then, yeah, battery electric is not going to work on mass scale without major, major investment in things that were not talked about during this presentation.
Right. Yeah. So, that's a perfectly valid, you know, point of view. And I'm glad, you know, your voice, that you know, your opinion on that, because, yeah, I mean, that's... It's very, very, very possible. Maybe we can't get there.
At the end of the day, like, what are we really trying to accomplish here? And it's just the automakers just want to make money. They honestly don't care if they're making gas or electric. They just want to make money as a business. Right. The government just wants to, I don't know what they want to do. And, you know, at the end of the day, what do people want to drive, right? What do people want to drive? Do they want to drive? A lot of people, I'll tell you, will not ever drive an electric car. I guarantee you this. Plenty of people won't. They have no interest. I know plenty of them. I know people like me that I love electric cars. I want to drive one all the time, but that doesn't mean everyone else will. So I don't know. I think 50% in whatever it is, a few years, crazy. I don't think that's going to happen at all. But, you know, look, I'd love to be wrong about it. I think we should do all of our driving, electric, commuting, long distance, daily driving around town, whatever you gotta do. Personally, I think that should be all electric, because do you get any joy out of driving your 1.5 liter Fiesta around town? No, that could be an electric car. Save the gas cars for the enthusiast vehicles, I think.
Do you get any joy driving your 300 foot pound of torque Spark EV driving around town? Hell yeah.
I mean, maybe. A lot of people would drive it like a car too. I mean, I do. I think that's cool. But you know, 90% of people aren't car enthusiasts, and they just want the easiest way to get around. Some of them are influenced by cost. Some of them are influenced by convenience, and, you know, it's, everyone's going to be a little bit different, but yeah, personally, this whole, you know, show that they put on, this whole play, not for me.
I hear you. Yeah. So just to touch really briefly on a couple of the companies involved here, GM's electrification plan they announced that they will be adding two more battery cell manufacturing plants in the U.S. Just recently this week. We can't say for sure if that's linked to this government announcement or not, but if GM wants to be a contender in an electric future, it definitely needs to expand cell supply. So it'll have four factories when this is all fleshed out, and with a, you know, probably produce over 150 megawatt hours by 2030, maybe more. I don't know if anyone wants to say anything about that in particular, but, and Ford was also upping its rhetoric about electrification with its chief operating officer saying the other day that it will spend more on EVs than ICE vehicles from 2023 on. So, you know, that's, I don't know, that's a interesting statement, does that get us to 50% by 2030? I don't know. I think it. Well, I don't know if it's who's going to get us there. If Ford and GM and Stellantis, if they're going to be able to produce enough vehicles, I think their internal goals are more like 40%. So, you know, Tesla might just, especially if they have a more compelling model come out in the next couple of years or so, you know, they could fill up that gap because they don't have gas cars that they have to worry about. They're just selling as many vehicles as they possibly can and trying to develop their supply chains to support their ambitions, basically.
Yeah, I mean, right now we have yet to see really a legacy, or I should say existing automaker, really transition their fleet to electric and do so successfully. We don't know if this is even possible yet because we haven't seen. You know, Ford is one of the largest automakers, but let's take a smaller one. Let's look at like Nissan, for example, or, one of these C-level, not necessarily BC-level automakers. If they were to just go cold turkey and make EVs, it would kill them instantly. They would die, no question. So, you know, what is the best way to transition over? That's, you know, people's full-time job or being futurists or figuring this out. I don't know. But I will say, like, right now it just seems like a shouting match as to who can spend the most amount of money, or at least say they're going to spend the most amount of money, and meanwhile they only have like one EV on sale. So, right. Ford, you can only buy one battery electric vehicle from Ford in the United States, and it is the Mustang Mach-E. And they're like, we're going all electric. Great. Well, let's see some more cars. We'll talk about it in a few years. Right now, Tesla has proven, you know, they can go all electric and make money. So that's pretty cool. You know, at the end of the day, they're just they're killing it. And everyone else is just trying to get a piece of the PR pie, I think.
GM as well. One car.
Yeah, well, EV and EUV, you know, that 0.2 inches taller of that EUV, really.
But and GM's defense, I mean, they have two plants under construction. They just announced two more. That is pretty impressive. They plan to build the Cadillac Lyriq at the Tennessee plant, maybe even a Honda Acura EVs at the Tennessee plant. So at least GM has that, you know. Have any other large legacy automakers in America announced that many plants? So
yeah, but like GM, everyone's doing their own thing, right? You know, so everyone is going to tool up and do this in a few years. It's just like they kind of want the publicity now for the products that are going to come years from now. And to me, that just doesn't sit so right. That's just annoying. Just like, let's talk about what you're doing today, and then we'll give you the praise when you actually maybe bring something to market.
Right. Chris L. mentions in the comments that Biden should have committed to building all the new Postal Service vans electric and making all new government vehicles electric. But, you know,
they just signed a deal with Oshkosh. They're all going to be combustion.
Right. I mean, well, there's some options for some of them to be electric. There's some electrification in there, but, you know, it's not ideal. You know, but
in my neighborhood, they're going to be gas.
Right. So I wanted to move on real quick then. So, let's talk about something that is, you know, selling, you know, so Tesla. So Ford was bragging recently, and rightfully so, that its F-150 Lightning pickup truck has received 120,000 reservations. It appears as though the Cybertruck from Tesla could be up to 1,250,000 reservations. So over 10 times that. Of course, it has had a lot more time to get there. It debuted in like November of 2019, and the Lightning only debuted earlier this year. So, and also, 1,250,000 is not an official number. That comes from an unofficial reservation tracker created by fans. It's a Google Doc. And I don't know if you can bring that up, Martin. It's in the show notes.
Okay. Apologies.
No, it's okay. But it's still a pretty significant number. Michael, do you have an order for Cybertruck?
No, I don't.
Okay. Tom does.
Yeah, I have an order for a Cybertruck and a Ford F-150 Lightning. You know, when I tell you, when I put in my order for the Cybertruck, I didn't think that I would be getting another all-electric pickup truck from another brand first. And it looks like that's going to be the case. I would imagine I'm going to be able to get my F-150 Lightning before the Cybertruck's available for me, at least. So we'll see, but it would appear as though that's the case. I'm not all tied up with this crazy million, you know, how many of those are actually going to translate to sales?
Right. It's great. 20%.
Yeah, of course. But even if it's 20%, Kyle, that's like, that's, you know, a couple of years worth of manufacturing.
Oh, they'll sell everyone they can make.
Exactly. And I think Ford's going to sell every one of the F-150 Lightnings that they can make
also.
So, totally agree. And speaking of the F-150 Lightning, we had a comment earlier on. I think the person pulled the comment because I just went back to try to pull it up. Huh. They asked me, hey, Tom, what happened to your review last week on the podcast? I had just gotten home from visiting Ford and driving in the F-150 Lightning, and I promised a video coming up. I'm still editing it. I had over 50 video clips of my trip to Ford's, the Rouge Center and their Dearborn test track that I'm editing down to a video for Inside EVs. I'm hoping to have it finished over this weekend and then maybe get it up next week. So keep an eye out for that. That's going to be coming up on the Inside EVs YouTube channel. I just haven't had time to finish editing it yet.
Right. Oh, I forgot to mention, we were talking about the Cadillac Lyriq earlier. So pre-order is open for that this September. I want to say the 18th, but I'm not positive. Maybe there's no, I don't know. Anyway, on the Inside EVs forum, we started a thread. So if you're planning on ordering the Cadillac Lyriq, you know, please chime in and check in there. We'd love to hear your thoughts about what you're looking forward to. And yeah, so we can follow your experience with that car. And also on the site this week, we had a look at the GMC Hummer EV with Marcus Brownlee. He's a tech YouTuber, and he's got a great video on the Hummer. They brought him the pickup truck and the SUV to his like studios there and let him crawl all over it. And he found stuff that I didn't know about the car. And it was kind of great to see that thing. And he didn't get to drive it yet, of course, but yeah. That's coming.
Well, that's because they don't have a finished drivetrain for it,
right? Well, I mean, they only have two existing vehicles. There's like the truck and the SUV. There's no, there's nothing that they can give them. I mean, they have prototypes. They have mules or pre-production vehicles out there on the road. We've seen in the desert and testing and stuff. But yeah, and I thought that was going to be out this fall. I think that was the idea, but for some reason I heard something that sounded like it was being pushed back a little bit, but maybe it's not. I probably shouldn't say anything about that until I double check, get my facts straight, do my research. Okay. But speaking of Tesla, also there was a neat thing on the site this week. So it's been a while since we heard anything about a new vehicle from them, and really, here we're still waiting for it to come through with the Cybertruck and the Semi. But in China, the most affordable Tesla yet may have already had its prototype built and suppliers lined up, with trial production beginning by the end of this year. So dovetailing that is a separate rumor that BYD has agreed to supply Tesla with its so-called Blade battery. That's a lithium iron phosphate chemistry that BYD is using in a cell-to-pack system. It's cheaper than batteries with chemistry that Tesla uses in the U.S., but it's also not as energy dense. Historically, lithium LFP, they call it for short, has also had more voltage sag as well. So it's been like a lower performance battery. I mean, for like a lower performance vehicle, not high performance like a lot of Tesla vehicles. So, but for a less expensive vehicle, like we're talking here for the Chinese market, this might be the perfect thing. And it's also seen as safer. Although a few weeks ago, I don't know if any of you guys heard about this, some outfit crash tested a BYD Han. And a couple of days after the crash, they tested, I forget what they tested it with, but it's a great video. But a couple of days after that crash testing, it caught fire and burned, which is, you know, kind of weird, because LFP is like supposed to be, you know, not really a fire, have issues with fire. I think BYD is saying they suspect that the coolant was swapped somehow and that was responsible, but whatever. It is generally less fire prone than other chemistries. So Kyle, what do you think about Tesla going down market in China? Good idea?
100%. Makes sense. Love it. Down market all the way. You want as many people in your car as possible. In China specifically, the Tesla name carries a lot of weight, a lot of prestige. That's what matters to Chinese buyers, or at least a lot of them. And whatever they're going to call it, however it's going to look, it will be a huge success. People will flock to it. You still have a lot of first-time car buyers in China that are now, you know, starting to make quite a bit of money, but Model 3 can still be quite expensive. And it's actually not that small of a car. In these dense cities, the smaller the car, the better. Right. So I'd love to see something like this. I hope it has a hatchback. And I think it's going to be a huge hit whenever they release a less expensive version.
Right. What do you think, Tom?
So Kyle nailed it. Yeah. I mean, down market is the way to go. I mean, that's the ultimate goal of Tesla, you know, to be able to produce vehicles that everybody can afford. As affordable as the Model 3 and Model Y are, they're not affordable for a lot of people. So yeah, I mean, that's the ultimate goal, to get a vehicle right in that entry-level price class, that, you know, a usable electric vehicle that has decent range and has a good recharging infrastructure. I mean, that's how we get to that 50% and beyond, a goal that we're setting here too, you know, is it a bit, make the vehicles more affordable for people. You could make as many as you want, but if they're all, you know, 45,000 plus, a vast majority of the American public isn't going to be able to afford them. So yeah, this is awesome. It's still a rumor. You know, we don't know. It's right. Interesting that this rumor is circulating around the Blade batteries, that, you know, I mean, that's the direction Tesla's going in with, you know, cell to pack, you know, eliminating the module. So it kind of makes sense. You know, if it works, then that'd be fantastic. I hope it's more than just a rumor.
And good for BYD too. I mean, they have their own car cells, you know, to put batteries mm-hmm. in, but they were originally a battery maker. That's kind of, that was their thing. And then they, you know, branched up the cars to put them in back in the day. Yeah, I'd like to see a little more affordable car here in the US besides China. All right. Just looking at inside communications. Okay, so let's move on then quickly, because we can't spend a whole lot of time today with y'all, unfortunately. So we've seen two of the first three vehicles being built on the Hyundai Group EGMP platform already. Those are the Hyundai Ioniq 5, which just started arriving in the UK, as Martin mentioned, and the Kia EV6. But the premium Genesis brand, however, hasn't shown us what it's doing with its platform. But we've seen it like testing and camouflage last winter. But somebody did manage to get a picture of it, and it's been taken down from Instagram where it had appeared. But we have this image on the site, and if you're looking at us on YouTube or on Twitch, you can see it on your screen now. And yeah. So I think the GV60, that's the Genesis model name for it. This may be the best version yet, I think. It's kind of hard to judge completely from one shot of the rear, but there's a good chance it's better looking than the EV6 and more aerodynamic than the Ioniq 5. Inside, it's bound to be better, right? So I don't know. Michael, had you seen this?
Yes, I did see it, and I'm pretty excited about it. It seems like the Koreans are doing a good job with their electric vehicles. There's a good chance I might get one of their electric vehicles next year when they reach the US.
Oh, yeah? You're mm-hmm. in the market for, the Ioniq 5, maybe?
Or the EV6. Yeah. We'll see.
Did you see the EV6 in person? Was that you?
No, unfortunately, I did not. No.
Okay. I was thinking, yeah. So, Kyle, what do you think of this?
Yeah, cool. We'll see. I mean, it doesn't excite me. Sorry.
No? Okay.
No. That's fine. It's an ugly, coupified crossover.
It is. I mean, I don't think it's... I think it's...
Looks oh, thanks decent. For agreeing. You agree. Finally, coupified crossover.
It is coupified crossover, but I could...
It's got something of the...
You can't deny the tech. What matters here is what's underneath. It's going to be awesome.
Right.
And it looks like the GLC Coupe. It's got a bit of Mercedes about that rear quarter on it.
Yeah, it does.
It looks... That's no bad thing.
It's describing a GLC Coupe over the phone, and then this is what they came up with.
Yeah, that's what's happened. They've shown them a picture and been like, make one of these premium vehicles.
There you go.
But Genesis, you've been in Genesis, though, Kyle. Like, how do you feel? But the interior is like bound to be better than what we've seen in the Ioniq 5, right?
Yeah, Genesis in general is one of the most innovative automakers by far, not in the fact that they're going electric, in the fact that they know how to make a special experience for the driver at a not so crazy high cost. And yeah, really interesting experience driving them. They get all the looks, all the attention, great sound systems, love the way they drive. I'm all in on the Genesis brand. I think it's great.
Right. I saw the, I saw GV70 here the other day. That's like the
new, good looking SUV.
Yeah, I was like, whoa.
Those tailpipes with the little perforations on the inside. So nice.
So I wasn't really that keen on looking at it. I like at the pictures, but then in person, I was like, oh, okay.
Everything just looks high quality, but the price tag doesn't match. It's amazing. It's right, like the best value for a new car. But, you know, still people will buy a BMW, Mercedes, or Audi. And in a lot of respects, the Genesis is even better than those. In some, like driving dynamics, it's not. But for most people who don't care about that kind of stuff, it's the best car you can buy for the money if you're looking for a luxury vehicle.
So I'm thinking with the eGMP platform. So it's got like great range and super fast charging with its 800 volt system. I think it's really going to move. I think it's going to move the needle for the Genesis brand in general, because it's not a super high profile brand here in the US.
And yeah, it's getting there. It's very market specific. You see them around LA a lot.
Right.
You know, it just depends on where you go.
Okay. Right. Here, not so much, but.
Yeah. Here in Los Angeles, there's GV80s everywhere now.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh yeah.
And that's the SUV?
The SUV. And okay. they're quite polarizing. Yeah. You're right. Nice.
Tom, any thoughts on this?
We've said enough on this. Move on.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go.
All right.
We got to wrap this show up. We got stuff to do.
Yeah.
Kyle and I both have one foot out the door already.
Okay. So other little bits of news that we had for you. Tesla is now asking $5,000 more for Model S, or which you can order now, and Model X, which is not even being delivered yet. So their prices have been going up for like Model Y too as well for the last little bit. So there's that.
Why not? If they can charge more and sell, they were doing the opposite in China. Prices going down in China.
That's true.
Why not? They want to get market share and scale.
Was it the SR Model 3 that went down?
Yeah. And so
Tesla's goal is to charge the most amount of money for their car while continuing to sell every single one they can make.
Right. They're really dynamic with the pricing.
Their goal is just to, you know, obviously they need to make money. They're a company. So, you know, let it be fluid. I'm all for the fluid pricing of Tesla.
But that's a good thing, because you could previously top spec a Model 3 and not be far away from Model S, which began at 70 grand. Well, you can't get into Model S now for less than $90,000. That puts a bigger gap in between. And that's a good thing, because I like these cars being premium cars.
Yeah,
so
but just
I'm
wait
never
going to
buy one.
Hey, so someone mentioned this the other day. So this makes the Cybertruck at the prices that are posted on the website like a really good bargain. So if you pre-order like a $40,000 Cybertruck, I mean, is that the price that you're going to be able to buy it for now?
All right.
You don't know with Tesla. And one of the things,
can of worms.
One of the things I want to talk about pricing is, and we've mentioned this before, because Tesla has no haggle pricing and they sell their vehicles directly. You see that every time they make a little price change, 1,000 here, 500 here, 2,000, we see it and we talk about it. Mm-hmm. This happens all the time with automobile companies. They don't change the MSRP. The forward-facing pricing remains the same, but they do it behind the scenes with factory-to-dealer incentives. You know, and it's all based on supply and demand, just like what's going on with Tesla right now. There's a huge demand for the vehicles. They bump up the price a little bit. You know what? In 8 months, if all of a sudden they've fulfilled all their S and X, their new refreshed models, and the demand goes down, guess what's going to happen? Oh, $2,000 price cut on the Model S. The OEMs do this all the time with factory to dealer incentives. You don't know it. You go into the dealership. You say it's
every month
a $50,000 MSRP, but you don't realize the manufacturer just told the dealer, you know, for the next 90 days, you get $2,000 back on every one of these vehicles you sell. So now they have $2,000 more to play with. You can find this information. It's available online. There's different sources that provide it. I highly recommend, if you're going to buy a new car, do some research, find out what the current factory to dealer incentives are. And now you're going in there at least with some bullets in your in the chamber. So you have some negotiating leverage. So this is like what Tesla's doing with their prices. It's a little maddening because it's up, it's down, it's sideways, it's, you know, whatever. But it's not new. This happens. It's just we haven't been privy to seeing it all these years.
Well, in the but
right on the money.
That's a little bit different with in the case of the Jeep Wrangler 4xe, which I was just going to mention too. That's prices have gone up, like the MSRP.
Oh, it's the cheapest MSRP. Jeep you could buy. I mean, or in lease, I should say. People were leasing 4xe's because they came in, I want a Wrangler and I don't want to pay much. They'd get 4xe's. They didn't even know it had a plug on it. This happened many times.
So now it's like $3,000 more than it started out. It, originally, it had been increased by $1,810 or something, or 3.8% to $49,805. Now it's the price has gone up by an additional $1,220 to $51,025, which is, you know, $3,030 more than it was at the very beginning. But as you're saying, maybe there's a better deal to be had with the lease in this case.
Most things with tax credits are good to lease,
right? So you know, speaking of that, we mentioned it earlier at the top of the show. The 2022 Leaf is now they've cut the price on that, the MSRP, and it's down to $27,400, which brings it close to $20,000 if you deduct the $7,500 federal tax credit, which it's still eligible for a little while at least. And depending on what happens with, you know, politically with the extension of that deal, might, you know, forever, as long as the Leaf continues to exist, which
means they just need to nix this thing already, but they're waiting for Aria to hit the dealers.
Yeah.
Still. Come on.
Yep.
Still waiting.
Come on.
All right.
And Dom, you mentioned that the price after the federal tax credit, don't forget there are state incentives. That you pile on top of that. Here in New Jersey, the base, it's basically free. The Leaf S would qualify for a $5,000 cash on the hood rebate. So it's 12.5 off the cost of the car, which brings the Leaf Plus S, because it has to have more than 2,000 miles of range to 200 miles of range.
2,000 miles?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's with 10 Phillips, Kyle.
Tom, can you do us a favor? Can you go to the Nissan dealer, work up, like just negotiate, you know, just get whatever the best lease price is on a Leaf in Jersey and just get one?
So it would be super cheap. And even the base Leaf with the 40 kilowatt hour battery pack, that would qualify for about $3,700. So the net price, you can buy a new Leaf S for $17,000 here in New Jersey.
We should get one and give one to the. Can we talk to our boss John and just get one and give one to the viewers, in a competition or something for 2 years?
I mentioned something like that a while ago, I think it was. I mentioned for the 500E because the leases were like $99 a month, and they nixed that. So
Out of Spec's giving away a free Leaf.
Exactly. We have to do it through Out of Spec.
Yeah. All right. We'll do it. I promise you. I will lease a Leaf. I will give it to someone. Let me just go work up some deals. I don't know legally if I can just give away a lease, though.
Don't commit to anything here yet.
I'm not committing. Yeah. I'm going to say I want to give one away.
Hey, before we take off here, let's Rivian just showed us what its first service center is going to look like. And so we just want to bring up a picture of that real quick because they have.
And hopefully you don't have to visit very often, by the way.
Right. Yeah, it looks kind of nice. It looks like the color scheme sort of matches their vehicles, like they got mustard couches there, and you know, it's nice and airy.
It's not more off-roady.
Well, yeah, right. Well,
there's some plants and dirt on the side.
Yeah,
I mean, think they'd have like, I don't know, like, you know how Jeeps have the little stickers where they're always driving on things, like going off-road, whatever. Right. I thought they would play into the fun nature of their cars a little bit more.
Yeah. So they're going to have, was it the end of this year? Was it like a 10 or so? service centers up and going, and then a bunch of them opening up next year, of course.
Maybe. And they just need to get cars out first.
Yeah. And notice that these are service centers. They're not sales and service centers. And we don't really have time to get into this today. Don, maybe we'll pick this up in a future episode. One of the things we have to be cognizant of is that Rivian and Lucid is going to have a very difficult time getting licenses to sell cars through like showrooms, like Tesla has the Tesla showrooms in a bunch of states. And the reason being is Tesla was able to get licenses in many states because nobody saw them coming.
Right.
Honestly,
they
weren't a threat. It was like, okay, this is a cute little, yeah, that's cool. They're making electric cars. We'll let them sell them here for a bit. Mm-hmm. But what happened was, you know, we saw how that worked out, and they're taking such market share that the states here, and I'm kind of involved with this with some of the work I do with Plug in America, that now that they realize the threat that's being posed by the direct sales model, the states are already putting in place legislation that made Tesla's licenses a one-off. That was like, okay, Rivian can't come and say, well, you allowed Tesla to open up 5 sales stores. We're no different. So now we can do that. Right. They're already putting up the roadblocks so that will not be a legal argument. They're blocked from Lucid's already been blocked from setting up any sales stores in New York. Wow. This is going to have the war. They have a gallery, but in that gallery, and I visited it, they are not allowed to talk about pricing. They're not allowed to assist the customer in any way to buying a Lucid. This is going to happen. The war's begun with the National Auto Dealers Association, NADA. The direct sales model is being viewed as an existential threat to the car dealership model, and the war is full on now. So it's going to be really interesting how Rivian and Lucid are both going to be approaching this, because they're not going to be able to do what Tesla did. I think a lot of our followers and a lot of people just assume that they'll be able to do it because Tesla did. It's not the case.
Right. So it may force them to innovate. So, you know, this could really backfire for OEMs or for dealerships, you know, if they put up this.
It's not going to backfire for them at the end of the day. Then they're allowed. Oh, good. We just got an extra year of our exclusivity. Some dealers for these automakers, if they fight hard enough, maybe some of them will choose not to go direct sales and to sell them through these dealers and dealer groups. What they're really concerned about, and I know we really have to get off the show, is you know, their arguments are like, we don't want GM to set up a corporate store and then sell invoice to the direct public. This is one of their big arguments. Yeah. So, you know, we'll get into it in another show.
Okay. So that brings us to the end of this show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs Forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching on YouTube, or a rating if you're listening on another platform. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom Longley is at Tomalog. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Michael, what's your Twitter?
Enthusiast View. It's an old one.
Enthusiast View. All right. Okay. All right.
Tom, let me interject 1 minute. Sorry to interrupt your closing arguments.
Puppies.
One thing that I want to say, you're talking about subscribe and to the channel. I am like embarrassed at the low amount of likes we get on this podcast every week in relation to the amount of people that view it. Sure. Guys, if you like what we're doing here, please click like, because that helps us find new followers. The more likes we get, the more YouTube shares this. So please like our podcasts if you like what we're doing. We know people like it because we're starting to get a lot of people watching every week, but like, I'll see there'll be 3,000 people viewed and they'll be like, 40 likes. I'm like, really? So please click that like button. It helps us bring in a bigger audience.
Didn't Howard Stern say that he had so many listeners, but half of the people hated him? So maybe people just don't like us. They're watching it.
We hate watching us.
Let's hope not.
Well, Kyle's gone now, so you could like it. I'm sure the person you hate is Kyle, not us, right, guys? Just kidding, Kyle.
All right. Yeah. So let's head out. So please click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, and then we'll see you all again next week. Yeah. We'll be right back.